Hi everyone and welcome to the Tech Recruitment Podcast. This is the episode number, the next one, so let's kick it off. Mark, welcome to the Tech Recruitment Podcast. I'm so excited to welcome you here because you have so much experience with running your own agency. You had lots of ups and downs, as I have heard, and this could be a great opportunity to see and learn from your experience and see also what others can do. I mentioned before we started that we have members of the Academy who, some of them would like to start a new agency, some of them already operate an agency, and they don't really know how to get new leads. So welcome to the podcast. I'm super excited to welcome you here.
Thanks, Michael. I'm excited to be here. And you're doing an amazing job with your podcast and your YouTube channel. It's really impressive. So fantastic job. It's an honor to be here. I would like to correct one thing you said, which is I have not run my own recruitment agency. So I worked as a recruiter initially. That's how I learned this business for several years. And then realized that my true path was more the learning and development. So what happened, Michael, is I was doing okay as a recruiter. I was sort of average. And I was working in a firm of about 200 people. And I was sort of in the middle of the leaderboard. And I wanted to be towards the top, right? But I didn't know how I could. I was already working hard, doing everything I knew how to do. So I hired a coach. And that person helped me to double my billings in 90 days. I got to the top 15% of the business, the top person in my team for production. I got promoted. I was able to put a deposit on a house and buy a better car. And it was such a life-changing, plus it's just more fun when you're achieving your goals, right? And so that experience planted the seed for me to think, well, maybe someday I could help other people to improve their results also. So that's how I went from being a recruiter to being a coach, but I have not run my own agency. Although for the last 20 plus years, I've helped other recruitment agency owners to improve their practice and grow their firms.
Awesome. And this experience is even more relevant to the topic that we are going to discuss today, right? So how to get new clients, how to improve the marketing and business development. So I think you specialize in the inbound part, right? The inbound marketing. So that's what we could dive deeper to. And for listeners who don't really know the terminology just yet, could you just clarify what's the difference between outbound and inbound marketing or sales?
Sure. It's very simple. And by the way, it's not either or. We recommend that you do both. Okay. And they complement each other and amplify each other in a way I'll explain. So, but in simple terms, outbound is you are contacting them, you're reaching out to them to start a conversation through whatever channel, whether it's the phone or LinkedIn or email or what have you. And then inbound is the opposite. They're reaching out to you. So they're coming to you instead of you having to chase them. I guess that's the best way of putting it. So the benefit of inbound, of course, number one, is that in terms of you don't have the same effort to chase, you don't feel like you're a salesman who's having to chase people because they're coming to you and asking for your help, which in turn positions you differently, right? So you're then more seen as an expert and an authority in your niche, which means that the whole sales process is easier. And it's already a warm call because if they're contacting you, it's because they've heard of you, maybe they've seen some of your content on LinkedIn or on another channel, and they're coming to you because they already believe that you might have the answers they're looking for. And that changes the dynamic of that whole conversation. So it's a lot more open. There is more geared to them working in a partnership with you rather than seeing you as a vendor, as a salesman. They see you more as an expert they want to partner with to achieve their result, build their team or make that critical hire. And so therefore they're more cooperative. It's easier to get a higher fee. And it's also easier to get that business on a retained basis or an engaged basis where they pay you part of the fee up front. So for all those reasons, I love inbound marketing. But I just want to caveat that you do still need outbound as well. It's not one or the other. It's ideally a combination of both.
Awesome. So thanks for clarifying. And now I feel like we should only do inbound because it sounds like a lot more fun. I know that the outbound is usually easier because you just open LinkedIn and you start messaging some prospective clients.
Yep.
But that's also very kind of frustrating because only 5% or even less of the prospects respond, which means 95% don't respond and people get frustrated.
Right. So here's why you'd still need to do both, even though inbound is more fun. You're 100% right. The reason you need to do both, there's two reasons. Number one is that the type of outbound that I'm talking about, Michael, in which we specialize in, is organic. So you could do paid advertising, right, such as on Facebook or YouTube or LinkedIn. And in that case, you are able to create more of a predictable lead flow and you're able to scale it, right? But then also you need a big budget to put towards that. So for a lot of the clients we're working with are solopreneurs or very small recruitment agencies, and they aren't necessarily wanting to spend money on advertising. So the type of inbound marketing we're talking about is organic. So you're posting content, for example, or you know, you might have a podcast, you might do a video series, you might write articles. We can talk about the different types of content in a minute, but this is excellent for building your authority and, you know, developing a following and for positioning yourself as an expert and building your personal brand. For those things, it's all excellent, but it doesn't instantly result in leads and it's not predictable. So, you know, you can't say, I need a new job order this week, so I'm just going to put a post up on LinkedIn. That may or may not work. You should post on LinkedIn consistently anyway, but it's not, it's something that builds over time as well. That's the second thing is you can't just start post a few times on LinkedIn and expect to be flooded with leads, right? That doesn't work that way. So if you need jobs today, you need to proactively go after that business. You need to send messages, send emails, make calls, send text messages, and do whatever you can to get those clients. But here's how the two work so well together, Michael, is as you start posting valuable content online, for example, insights that you have from your experience that may be beneficial for your target audience, and at the same time, you're connecting with your exact ideal clients on LinkedIn and following up with them via the direct messages, then what happens is something fantastic, which is that the two, the outbound and the inbound, actually amplify each other, right? Mm-hmm. So when you connect, people will start seeing your content in their newsfeed, which is why it's really important. So if you're only doing outbound right now, let's say you're only trying to send people messages all day on LinkedIn, the problem is that people forget. They'll forget who you are. So you send them a message, and then a few weeks later, you send them another message. They have no idea who you are. They've forgotten all about you. But if you connect with them, and then that day or the next day, they start seeing your content in their newsfeed, it reinforces and like, oh, that's that guy, Michael, who I connected with yesterday. And then they start getting to know who you are. And then when you send the follow-up message, it's not like a cold message anymore. They already know. Or even if you were to call them on the phone, it's not a cold call anymore. They already know who you are. So in this case, the inbound marketing that you're doing actually increases the response to your outbound effort. And so an example of that we're experiencing right now is we're starting to really scale up cold email campaigns. But what's happening is that because we've had this podcast that's been going for over 3 years now, and I'm sending the emails to people who I'm connected with on LinkedIn, they already know who I am. And so even though I've never emailed them before, they're responding, the response rate is fantastic. And they're emailing back and saying, oh, I already listened to the Resilient Recruiter and I like you know what you do. That's a really, really warm conversation, right? Instead of who are you and why are you contacting me?
It's just so interesting how it works in the long run, because I've seen other recruiters who just send messages And then they determine after 2 weeks that it doesn't work because they got zero responses back. But the way you kind of explains it totally makes sense, because first you connect, then you start showing content. But I kind of also see some of the solopreneurs and freelance recruiters being a bit overwhelmed with everything that they could do with regards to the content. And
that's true.
Now, if we look at some companies such as, you know, from our industry, TopTal, for example, they organize events, they organize online web summits, they write content every day on LinkedIn, they have blogs, they have like pretty much everything, right, that you can come up with, they are doing because they have a large team. But how can someone who also needs to do recruiting, like how can they level up with this level of activity?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you're 100% right. Focus is the key here, and just implementing one thing at a time and not getting overwhelmed with too many different strategies and trying to do everything at once, because then nothing is going to work. I've made that mistake myself. So it's a case of, first of all, deciding what's going to be the starting point. And for most people, I would suggest the easiest place to start is posting original content on LinkedIn. Okay. Consistently is the key. So 2-3 times a week, ideally, you know, every day, but 2-3 times a week, consistently over time, is something which really does pay dividends. And it's something that is easily manageable in a few minutes a day, that there's no excuse that you couldn't do that, you don't have time, and so on. Usually the excuses are more like, oh, I don't know what to, you know, what kind of content to write about, or it's imposter syndrome, like, oh, why would anyone be interested in my opinions or my ideas or what have you? So if you can get over that, the imposter syndrome, and realize people, you do know a lot that your clients could benefit from, your candidates could benefit from. And so it's almost selfish to keep that to yourself and not share it with the world. Like, you could have a bigger impact in the world if you just think of all the knowledge, the experiences that you've developed over the years in your professional career, and even some of your personal experiences, and then share the LinkedIn is an ideal platform for sharing those experiences. And what you'll find is that people really appreciate it, because you're giving value before you're asking for anything in return, right? So by leading with value, people start to know, like, and trust you. And not everybody's going to like your content. That's just a fact, right? But there will be plenty of people who really resonate with your voice and your, and by voice, I don't necessarily just mean your audio. It might even be your written voice, right? But the style, the way you communicate, the quality of your ideas, there'll be people who really like your stuff, and then they're paying attention to you. And then when they have a hiring need, who do you think they're going to turn to? You're going to be their first port of call. So in terms of overwhelm, the key is just picking one thing and getting started and doing it consistently. And then once you have a bit of a system and a process in place, because that's the other key, is having systems, processes, and templates that make things easier for you, then you can add another strategy and another one and another one. And, you know, things really start to take off because these things work in concert together. But the reality is, Michael, you don't need 10 different marketing strategies. You only need 2 or 3 really good ones that you do consistently over time. And that is the key, is to stay consistent.
That's true. Often we get overwhelmed with trying too many different things. And I'm guilty of this as well, because I like to jump to the next shiny thing quite often.
Yeah.
But coming back to the idea of posting on LinkedIn, for example, that's really easy. There is no barrier, just coming up with the topic and then the content itself. But let's imagine the freelance recruiter who is out there trying to write some content. Now, what should be the topic or the theme of those posts? Like, we have a few options. For example, should it be about the daily job of a recruiter? But then the question is it really relevant for the target audience? Or should it be rather something that is more technical, so it is relevant for the audience, but then it is essentially boring into a large extent? So, you know, and then there is probably something in between. So what would you suggest?
Yeah, is a great point. And we have, we give our clients like about 80 different prompts. And by prompts, I don't mean in the ChatGPT sense. I mean, starting points, ideas for topics that you can write about and to get the creative juices flowing. What we find is people can have writer's block at the beginning, but once you get started, then you'll have more ideas than you can possibly use. So to answer your question about like, should it be technical? Should it be about recruiting? The answer is really a bit of all of the above. Okay, so there should be variety. But the key is that at least 50% of your content, and maybe even more, 60, 70% should be what we call authority content. So these are insights. It's like educational type content. Okay. Now, ideally, it will be aligned with it will be targeted to your specialism, whichever niche market that you serve. What are their problems? What are the challenges they're facing? What are you observing? What are the conversations that you're having with clients, with candidates? Your content should really just reflect what you're seeing in the market, right? It's your observations. So, you know, you can even, a really great way to start is based on the actual conversations you're having with clients, just, you know, share something interesting that came up in a conversation with a client, for example, that you suspect there will be many other, say, hiring managers of tech companies who are going to resonate with that same problem, because, you know, then they're going to realize, oh, you know, he or she really understands my market and, you know, empathizes with what we're going through. So then they know that you are a specialist and that you get it, right? So it has to be relevant to the reader, not just you rambling, obviously. It needs to link your experience with the goals and problems and you know, day-to-day reality for your clients. And it's really about them. It's not about you. Having said that, I think it's also good to share some personal stuff about yourself, because that makes you more relatable. And you said, like, you don't want to be boring or too technical. I think techie people will like technical posts, right? So it won't be boring to them. But having said that, if that's all you post, then maybe you are a bit too dimensional and you want to share a little bit more about yourself. And so that, because here's the thing, people are going to want to do business with the recruiter who is a real person to them, not, you know, we have this stereotype of what a recruiter's like based on maybe their past experiences, or good and bad, you know, or so who are they going to buy from? The faceless recruiter who's spamming their inbox with LinkedIn messages, or the person who they know about your dog, they've seen your, you know, picture of you, your daughter graduating from university, or, you know, these little insights into your world, window into your world, so that they get that, number one, you do know your subject, and number two, you're someone who adds value and has insight, and number three, you're also a human being, ultimately, someone who they can relate to. That's why they're going to want to work with you.
Mm-hmm. I like this this structure. I see also kind of developing it further, as you say, because so far I've been mostly posting either educational content, which was too boring, or some content which was more about the recruiter life, but then it probably didn't resonate. But now the way you described totally makes sense. And some of the recruiters in our group, they also struggle with the kind of how to label it. I mean, imagine you post something and then no one likes it, right? You don't get any feedback. And then you scroll down a bit and you see, you know, some dog or cat or some funny video, 2,500 likes, you know, and then you are like, oh, okay, this was just today. And then you hope that the other day you get at least one like or one comment, which probably doesn't come the second day. And then it comes, you know, gets into a point when, you know, the person just gives up and is frustrated and then questions whether this is really the career, you know, that he dreamt about. So what would you say okay. is what to expect in such case?
Yeah. So listen, first of all, not all your posts are going to take off. Some are going to be ignored, right? And But that's okay. Well, I want you to think of it differently, actually. Think of it as this is just a daily practice, like going to the gym or brushing your teeth. It's something that is a habit that you do. Now, sometimes you can have a fantastic workout, right? Other times, it just doesn't feel right. You don't have a great workout, or you don't perform as you would have liked. Maybe you didn't lift as much as last time, or you didn't run as fast as the last week, or what have you. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't have gone, or that you shouldn't have gone for that run. It's showing up and doing the run, even if it doesn't go perfect. That sets you up for long-term success. So people need to think of it just as that type of habit. And sometimes it's going to be awesome, sometimes mediocre. Secondly, is to realize that the likes and the comments, of course, we want that. And it's not just a vanity metric, because it actually drives the algorithm. So the more people engage with your content, the more the LinkedIn algorithm will show it to even more people. And then it becomes a snowball effect, right? Whereas if you don't get any engagement, LinkedIn doesn't share it as distributed as widely, not as many people see it, and it just kind of like disappears, and no one really saw it. But typically what we see is somewhere in the middle. Most of your posts are not going to bomb, and they're not going to go viral. They're just going to produce whatever, 500, 1,000, 2,000 impressions. And I want you to ask yourself, imagine 1,000 people. And so if you're doing that three times a week, that's 3,000 people seeing your content, seeing your brand, being exposed to your message. That's valuable. So maybe it only got 6 likes and 2 comments, right? But, and 1,000 people saw it. But think of that over time. Think of that, you know, 3,000 a week, 12,000 a month, 144,000 impressions in the year, just that consistency over time. I mean, imagine having 1,000 people in a room, standing up and giving a presentation to 1,000 people in a room. That's a lot of people. So, you know, you might look at it and go, well, that post, that influencer gets, you know, 20,000 views or 100,000 views on their content. I'm only getting 500 or 1,000. That's still a lot of people. The other thing to realize is that even people might not always engage with your post, doesn't mean they didn't see it. One of our clients recently shared that, and he's an IT recruiter. He got an inbound lead for a head of position. So it was a big fee. And he filled it in a couple of weeks. And that lead came to him. He always asks, of course, like, how did you hear of us? And the person said, oh, I see your LinkedIn content all the time, and I thought it was really good. So this was a senior decision maker who saw his posts. And it wasn't one post. He just saw it over time. He saw there was, this guy like seems to know what he's talking about, right? That was the impression. And contacted him with this juicy job that resulted in a big fee. But here's the thing, Michael, that person never once commented or liked his posts. Okay. So there are people seeing your content as having an impact, even if they don't engage with it. So although we want the likes and comments because they drive the algorithm, it's still positive, even if, you know, someone doesn't necessarily engage. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. Now, when you say it, I'm exactly the kind of a guy who doesn't comment or like.
There you go.
I don't want other people to see that I saw the content.
Right.
Wow, that's quite powerful. But you also mentioned something else very interesting about the specialization, and just a while ago also about the niching down. So,
yeah.
You know, on one end, the recruiter can specialize in one part of IT, or on the other hand, can kind of specialize on the whole IT world. I mean, that's still some kind of a specialization, broader. But with that, it would attract potentially more people on LinkedIn, right? Because more people would perceive it as relevant content.
The opposite, exact opposite, Michael. You'll attract more people on LinkedIn if your specialization is more segmented, if that makes sense. So to me, technology, that's just too big. That's not really you're not a specialist to be an IT recruiter per se. You need to, so we take our clients through an exercise to really clearly define or redefine their market niche, what, you know, and niche down so that Because look, how many IT recruiters are there in the world? There's thousands, right?
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands, maybe. So there's a lot. But the more you specialize, the less competition you have. Mm-hmm. So, but also, the more your clients perceive you as an expert. So it's a little bit like, you know, if you needed a serious operation, you wouldn't go to your GP, right? You would go to a specialist. And it's the same with recruiting. Like, could the generalist IT recruiter fill the job? Probably. Okay. But if you are looking for, you know, someone who specializes in data analytics, for example, like a software engineer in data analytics, then, and there's a recruiter that specializes just in that, then who do you feel more confident giving that job to? The specialist or someone who does a lot of general IT recruitment and will have a go at that, right? You're gonna trust the one who, like, they do that every day of the week. That those are the people they speak to. They already have the network. They understand the terminology. They are able to screen out the ones who really can do, you know, perform well versus the ones who, you know, who maybe can't. So specialism is key. And so in terms of becoming seen as an authority, it's really hard to become famous and become perceived as the go-to recruiter across alt IT recruitment. Right? That's probably not going to happen. But could you become the number one go-to recruiter, or at least one of a handful of really well-known and well-respected recruiters in a much narrower niche? Definitely you could. So that's more valuable. And I know that the irony is people think, oh, but Mark, I would lose business if I specialized too much, right? The reality is, and so now having done this 20 years and also having interviewed 200 really big billers on my podcast and owners of fast growing recruitment agencies, the specialists, like 99 times out of 100, the specialists make more money. So it feels like the fear of loss, like, but I don't want to lose out on opportunities. But the reality is the opposite. By narrowing your focus, you'll actually make more money. You'll have more opportunities. Does that make sense?
Totally. Now, when you say specialists make more money, I guess that's the most important takeaway,
which
listeners should take and write it down. Because if that's the case, then it sounds like a no-brainer to start focusing on a part of the whole IT world.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And that focus could be the industry sector. It could be the functional area, the job, you know, title. It could be the level. It could be the location, like the geographic location, or it could be some combination of those things that leads you to your perfect kind of territory that you're going to stake out. You're going to claim that part of IT recruitment, and you're going to defend your borders, and you are going to, like, really take over that particular piece of land, if you like, if you think of it that way. And you're going to own everything in that patch. You know, your competitors aren't gonna get in there. You're gonna dominate that particular patch. And then, of course, you could expand your borders by hiring more people, right? You know, who might concentrate on adjacent markets. So either different job titles within the same industry, or different industries with the same job title, or same niche but different location, or higher level or lower level. So there's lots of ways you could expand, but realistically, one person should only focus on one niche.
I like it. Totally makes sense now when you say it. Okay, and are there any other ways how to accelerate the growth? So once the recruiter starts posting, you know, 2, 3, 5 times per week, then what's next? Yep. Like,
okay, so yeah, so that what is going to accelerate are 3 things. One is leveraging technology and automation. 2 is leveraging other people's time and talent in the form of virtual assistants. And 3, now the big theme that we're focusing on this year is leveraging AI. Okay. So it's you as one person, there's only so many hours in the day. There's only so many tasks you can do, right? And because your job is making placements, you need to really focus the majority of your time on talking to clients, talking to candidates, and, you know, orchestrating the deal. You're the deal maker. Okay. And that should occupy most of your time. So there's a lot of administrative tasks. There's a lot of other important tasks that are going to support you in order to perform at your best, but they aren't things you should personally be doing. They should either be delegated to somebody else, or they should be automated, or delegated, automated, and leverage the power of AI to speed up the production of those tasks as well. So most of our clients end up hiring one or more virtual assistants. So I've got two team members in the Philippines right now, and we're going to be expanding that team this year as well. And so, for example, a lot of the tasks that surround your inbound marketing can be delegated to somebody else. It doesn't have to be you that does it. Okay. So an example is my podcast, The Resilient Recruiter. So I do the fun part, which is what we're doing today, Michael, which is having an interesting conversation with, you know, cool people. I love this part. Like what we're doing now, this gives me a lot of juice, right? This is the fun bit. But all of the, as you know, there's a lot of steps to producing a podcast. Our process has something like 85 steps in it. Okay. Oh, wow. So those 85 steps are all mapped out with, you know, SOPs and templates and things in our project management software, which is Asana. But my team member, Rachel, handles virtually everything else. So she's the one that coordinates everything. She goes to the guests. She, you know, arranges the schedules. She makes sure that we have all the resources, like people's headshots and so on. You know, then we have, you know, a guy who specializes in the audio editing. Milan, he's in Serbia. Then we have Rachel's husband, Israel, who's in the Philippines also, does the show notes. And then we have another team member who does the graphics. But Rachel organizes all that for me, so I don't even have to think about it. All that I do is we decide who do we want to have on the show. And then, you know, obviously I decide the questions and the content for that. And probably the headline of the, like, what's the title of this episode going to be? That's the extent of my involvement. My team does everything else. We have a full-time video editor and podcast producer now, Sanjay. So he does all the videos, the shorts for YouTube, all that stuff. So ultimately, you have to leverage other people's time. But even if you're a solo, that may sound like, well, Mark, I can't afford to hire a whole team. But if you can't afford not to get help. If you're trying to do everything yourself in your business, then again, you're selling yourself short. You're not going to achieve your full potential. So the kind of compromise that it's not even a compromise. The people who don't want to build a big team, but they do want to get help, the solution is to hire a virtual assistant, because that way you can get someone full-time on your team who's dedicated to your business, who is smart, hardworking, enthusiastic, you know, coming up with great ideas for you. And they're going to take a huge amount of workload off of you, but it is still affordable for most solopreneurs and small business owners. So that's a long answer, probably more than you wanted, Michael, but that's the next step is you need to systemize things and delegate things and automate them so that then you frees you up to take on the next project.
Yeah. Well, I like this idea of a list of 84 tasks just to produce the podcast, and not just the podcast, but everything around it, the shorts and audio and the video and everything.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Awesome. So would you also suggest that recruiters establish a page on LinkedIn and then boost it with some ads, or is that something that is left to bigger agencies?
That's a great point. I personally have not experimented with that yet. Have you done any LinkedIn ads or?
Well, we have, but it's really expensive, probably 10 times more than Facebook. So we haven't really been able to make it work just yet because our budget was rather low. And then once we spent, you know, 2000 euros, we were like, oh my God, let's just put it on hold.
Exactly. So listen, I'm not an expert in this, I guess, to be honest. Right now, what we're doing is we're doing our organic content like podcast, posting on LinkedIn. We have our own email newsletter, so we're in regular touch with our own subscribers. We post on a few other social channels as well. We will be scaling. We will be doing paid ads in the second half of 2024. Right now, what we're doing is scaling outbound. So we're scaling the cold outreach. But here, as I said earlier, like the beauty is because we've got so much content, our messages are much, we're able to give a lot more value. We're not just pitching in these cold emails. We're actually sharing value, which means we're receiving a much warmer response and a higher response rate. So paid ads, something that I'm very interested in, but we've not done yet. So I can't really speak with any expertise on that.
Yeah, but the inbound sounds much more fun. You generate content, you are seen as a trusted advisor instead of the desperate sales guy.
So exactly.
Seems to be a great path forward.
Yeah, okay. 100%.
Just to be also mindful of your time.
Sure.
What are the things that you kind of recommend to people who have already made some placements? They have earned their first, say, 30,000, 50,000 euros or dollars within some reasonable time frame, and now they wonder what to do next. They started posting, but the clients haven't, they haven't received any client just yet. But they know that they will come at some point. Mm-hmm. What should they do? Like, what are the things that you would suggest to do besides creating content? Of course, that's just kind of on autopilot. We understand.
Yep. So, oh wow, there's so much. So, like, step one, as we've already discussed, is really getting clear on your niche. Step two is then really identifying your ideal client avatar. We've had a whole roadmap. So there's 9 steps here, okay? So let me back up a second, Michael, because what we want to go is from feast and famine to consistent clients, right? That's the journey. Making a couple of placements is great. It proves that there's something here that you're good. Like you can do this, right? So that gives confidence. I can do this. I can make money at this. But we need to be able to repeat that every single month, right? Make a couple, 2, 3, 4 placements every month. So you have that consistent income. So as we said, phase one is going from generalist to specialist. So you're going to define your market niche, number one. Number two, you're going to get clarity on your avatar of an ideal client. Okay. And who you're like, what's the, what is your ideal client profile and who are your dream clients? So that would be the next exercise. So doing that research and really getting a deep understanding of your buyer persona, the person that you're trying to communicate to. Okay. Step number three is starting to map out your market. Now, what that means is that, like, a lot of recruiters I speak to, I ask them, what's your total addressable market, TAM, TAM? They have no idea. Right. So, you know, as part of the exercise of figuring out your niche, like, is this too small? Is this too big? What's the ideal sort of market niche? You need to figure out these numbers. How many potential clients are there within that particular market niche? And then let's identify them all. You can build data sets of all of the potential clients in your space, and, you know, just actually and then enrich that data. So you have all the contact information, you have the relevant points of contact. So that's phase one, is you know who you're trying to communicate with, you know what their characteristics are, what their psychology is, what their challenges are, what their pain points are. And you also have a list of them, you know who you're trying to target. Okay. That's like the foundation level of building a business. You know your customers. Okay. The second phase is going from sort of like manual messaging one-to-one to try and start conversations with people to automated. So the next step four is really working on your messaging, Michael. I see so many recruiters and they all sound the same, which is a problem, right? And B, the messaging is bad. And so now clients are getting bombarded by all these mediocre messages that don't really don't have any impact. And then recruiters get frustrated because they don't understand, I'm sending all these messages and it's not working and it's taking up all this time. So before you scale it, there's no point in automating a message that's getting zero response. That's that would be a waste of time and resources. So first, we need to fine tune the messaging, make sure that it really speaks to your target audience. It speaks their language. It gets their attention. It gets a response. And once we've done that, then we would move on to scaling your messaging. So step five is I would typically start on LinkedIn with the messaging. So connecting and following up with people on a consistent basis. And again, that's something which you can either give to a virtual assistant once you've got it set up and running, or you can automate to some extent. You can automate the connection messages. Once they respond, you need a human being to follow up, because that's when you're really into a conversation. And then we would go to step six is email automation. Okay, so that's where we potentially are doubling up. So we're reaching out to people on LinkedIn. We're also reaching out to them on email, because it needs to be a multi-touch, multi-channel approach. You can't just reach out to someone once and expect that they're going to notice you and respond, right? You need to reach out over time on a variety of channels, multiple times, using different approaches, sometimes with, you know, text, sometimes with a video, sometimes with a call. So, you know, multi-channel, multi-touch. So that's phase two, is scaling up your outbound communication. And then phase three, we want to go from contingent recruiter to retained recruiting partner. Okay. So at that phase, phase one is laying the foundation. Phase two is starting to generate appointments with potential clients. Phase three is you're really refining your sales process in order to, number one, differentiate your services from the competition and really package your process in a way that is unique and is tangible, and clients can understand why they should pay you a bigger fee than maybe they pay at other recruiters, why they should pay you money up front, and why ultimately they should use you instead of, you know, others that are vying for their business. So that's the differentiation and packaging your process. Then we look at the, you know, how do you pitch your retained service? Why should clients pay you money up front? And how do you organize the sales process so they understand the value of doing that? You're signing them up on a retainer. And then the final step is really expanding those accounts and developing them into cornerstone accounts, which you can build your business on. So you have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 clients giving you ongoing repeat business. That's something that's real stability that you can build a business on. Of course, you can never stop marketing. You can never stop doing business development, because you can lose an account for no fault of your own, right? They get bought, acquired, you know, whatever. There's lots of things that can happen. A new head of talent comes in and they have relationships with other recruiters or what have you, right? So you can never be complacent. You always need to be proactive. But I don't know many big billing recruiters or successful recruitment agencies that do not have regular repeat business clients. It's so hard to do it. If you're only making one placement with one client and then you need a new client and a new client and a new client, then it's really, that's like a hamster wheel, which is really, really exhausting. So that's the 9 steps, Michael.
Well, I'll need to rewatch this again, probably twice, 3 times. And I hope listeners will also kind of go back to just the step number one, because it's just so powerful. And it's clear that you've executed this on, you know, several companies with several clients, and you kind of see the process, and it totally makes sense. Now, when you say it, I'm just kind of questioning myself now, like, how come I'm not doing it this way? Because it just makes sense.
Well, here's the thing. I don't want anyone beating themselves up because they're not already executing that whole thing. The funny thing is that nobody's perfect. Nobody's got all those things in place, right? We're still on that journey ourselves. Like we know the roadmap, and we have our own version of it for growing our business, and we're guiding our clients through it. And we've had clients double and triple their billings, but they haven't even done all of those steps. They've only done like 2 or 3 key things, but that was enough to, you know, help them to level up. So, like, again, we're human beings. We have finite time resources. You can't do everything, but you just do what you can step by step, and you'll get there.
No, that's just impressive. Yeah. Well, anyway, I could listen to you for the next 2 hours, I guess, because everything you say, you know, feels like, you know, a piece of gold that I feel so tempted to just implement right away. But
well, thanks, Michael. It was fun. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah. Awesome. So where can people find you and your company? You mentioned coaching, training business. You mentioned podcasts. So where can people connect with you?
So, of course, people welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn, Mark Whitby, as in the town in England, Whitby. Also, I'd love you to listen to my podcast. Michael has a brilliant podcast. So if you enjoy listening to this type of content, then check out The Resilient Recruiter. It's at recruitmentcoach.com/podcast. And, you know, like Michael's, it's totally free. And this is the kind of content that we talk about on a regular basis.
Awesome. Wonderful. So I'll include the link in the show notes, also on YouTube in the description. Also, the link to the coaching business, just if people need some more help with all these steps in the roadmap, they can reach out to you.
Thank you very much. That was awesome. And I'm learning from you as well. You've got a lot of subscribers on YouTube. I'm really impressed with what you're doing. You're on a roll. You're doing a lot of things really well, Michael.
Thank you. Well, I'm learning from people like you, so I'll let you know once I implement, you know, the step number 1, 2, and 3.
All right, fantastic. Have a great day.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye. Bye.
Hi again, and really quick, if you'd like to get a new job as the tech recruiter, or if you'd like to start working as the independent freelance tech recruitment consultant, or if you'd like to start and grow your own agency, we can help you get closer to your goals. So just go to our website, techrecruitmentacademy.com, and learn more about the programs that we organize every now and then. So just go to the website, techrecruitmentacademy.com.